Coffee Club, Coffee Club. Grind your beans and grab your favorite mug. It's Ollie Morgan, George and Gus. It's them boys from Coffee Club. Boys from Coffee Club.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Coffee Club podcast for episode 181. Today, George and I are joined by the one and only Joey Bags. I don't know how to say your last name.
I was going to say, let's give it a go.
But we have a legend here in the studio, friend of the pod, member of Coffee Club Track Club.
We weren't supposed to announce that till later.
we've put the pen to paper, inked a little deal, but Joey, how you doing, man? We're so excited to have you back.
It's good to be on. Well, I forget what episode I was on.
Just about to ask, like, what number do you think that was?
Literally, like, it must have been
six
early.
Or seven.
Early but days. I think it was...
Before 100, easily.
Well, no, it was literally top first 10, because I think I think it was either the first episode when we moved to the Coffee Club YouTube channel, or is the last episode that was posted on my YouTube channel?
Wait, yeah, it was on the dining table.
I don't even remember that setup. That was so long ago.
It definitely is.
I thought
on the
it was the second
YouTube
house, but no, it was literally.
I think it was one of the first ones posted on there.
Wait, it's the ham beans? It's the ham beans.
We wearing blue hats.
Yeah,
we
wore, that was it.
You had a ridiculous mustache, I think.
I did have a good mustache. I always do have a good mustache, but. I don't think it was anything crazy.
No, I think it was, dude. Maybe it was Morgan, actually.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Actually, it might have been Morgan.
No, it definitely was Morgan.
Yeah, I think you're right.
My mustache
I think it was November of like that year, so maybe we were in full November flight, plus the ham beans merch. It was a ridiculous episode, actually.
How did ham beans play out, by the way?
Well, the inside scoop is that company is run by the father of our previous roommate. So it's pretty much just them throwing us a bone, just for the lols.
They're doing great, though, I think.
We love bones.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can't tell you how much our episode had an impact on their stock prices, on their bottom line. I don't know if the investors or the shareholders were happy with that sponsorship, but it happened.
Hey,
if the ROI was low, I would imagine.
If they were doing poorly then, they're doing pretty well now.
Good time for beans.
Yeah, good time for American manufacturing.
You know, a downturn of the economy, beans start to thrive.
Yeah,
so
our roommate would always tell us, recession-proof industry, you stay in beans.
It's like Bitcoin, it's a hedge.
Amazing.
Gold.
Invest in beans, dried beans. That's the way to go.
What a trip down memory lane. It's crazy we haven't had you on since that.
No.
That's ridiculous.
I've thought about it every day since.
I've been mad for the last
evening every time I see somebody else on.
Oh, wow. That's crazy. Well, nonetheless,
so
happy to have you on. And there's so much good stuff to talk about. So many interesting recent changes in your life. You've coming off a couple of big weekends of getting out there back in the racing scene. And also you've recently started a newsletter. All amazing things. Do you want to plug the newsletter just quickly for anyone who wants to sign up for it?
Yeah, it's just on Substack. It's called 357 Newsletter, or you could just look up my name, Joey Barriatua. It's called 357 just because that's like my personal best in the mile. And I thought that was like when I was thinking of like a name for it, I was just trying to think of something impactful. And that's probably like the one thing I'll look back on my running career being like, that was the most impactful thing I did just from a young me perspective to now was running that time. Hopefully I don't run any faster because then I'd have to change it. So
that would suck. Newsletter is canceled. We're starting over again. Well, it's good to hear your thought behind it because for anyone who is wondering, a lot of what the newsletter is about is essentially, well, it's about anything that you want it to be about, but a lot of it so far is like sports marketing.
Yep.
You're kind of like behind the curtains view on things. And it is always refreshing to get an athlete's perspective on things, especially one like yourself who has been part of Tin Man, who was a team that was doing things on their own and had to learn a lot of lessons. Because there's always a bit of there's always like athletes will have opinions, we're in the thick of it, and then brands will do certain things. But I mean, at Tin Man, you guys had to do everything. So you had to learn, you know, with like boots on the ground. And so you've had all these great experiences and now you can share them and you can reflect on what's happening in the sports marketing world. And I think that's a good place to kind of start the conversation off, which is just asking like, yeah, where are you at in terms of life as a professional runner, all those things recently, Tin Man? What's happening with Tin Man? Let's just ask that.
Yeah. I guess the cat's been out of the bag by now, or people could have inferred, but Tin Man is definitely going towards, I think we came together as a team and agreed upon this, that from kind of like a future perspective in terms of how Tin Man Elite can stay relevant and the things that we want to do, which is just like pushing the sport, that we go towards more of like a marathon focused team. And so that obviously includes Reed and Connor. And this decision was basically made late last year. So we had already known that Drew was going to sign with ASICS, and we knew that Sam and I were going to be wanting to go in different directions outside of Adidas and kind of pursue our own things on the track. So it was kind of a mutual agreement in terms of, I think, what everybody wanted to do to further themselves the best, but while also keeping the team in mind and also just keeping the people who are invested in the team in mind, like Jonah Mark, specifically our coaches. Like, we just want to make sure that they're taken care of. So, that's why it's more of a marathon focus now. I think this gives our kind of our creative manager, creative director, Max McNerney, a little bit more focus in terms of what he wants to do and a direction for him to go. Cause kind of late, it was a situation where I felt like he was uninspired to make certain kinds of content, that he wasn't sure if it was really leading to any direction. You know, it kind of felt, from the way it kind of seemed like, from my perspective, it felt like he was like, I'm making content for what, you know? And I think this marathon content is super inspiring to him and something that he feels like is impactful. So that really helps him out a lot too. And at the same time, it gives guys on the track like me, Drew, and Sam a lot of leeway in terms of pursuing these things that we wanted to pursue. So obviously Drew went with ASICS, Sam went with Tracksmith, and I am still in limbo.
Do you feel like it's open doors for you, that the kind of separating of ways a little bit? Like, do you feel like there's more opportunities now?
Yeah, in theory,
in some ways.
That was the idea. It felt like there was a lot more opportunities for me out there, or at least that was the idea, that I would be open to new opportunities. I could kind of pursue things from more of a personal brand perspective rather than a kind of underneath the Tin Man Elite umbrella perspective. I think one of the things that I guess frustrated me about sponsors specifically early on, and this is kind of getting into like what I talk about in my newsletter and stuff.
I was about to say, we could just summarize.
We'll just continue to plug newsletters.
Yeah. Summarize each edition of the newsletter.
Is that whenever I would talk to a sponsor about kind of getting an individual, like these weren't, you know, like brand sponsors, these were small sponsors, you know. Every time I talked to a sponsor about potentially doing an individual deal, they'd always bring up Tin Man and how we can get Tin Man roped in on it. And I think a lot of other guys experienced that as well, where it was really hard to kind of pursue our own things without being roped into like the how Tin Man can be involved. And a lot of the time when it came to that, we would get to a point where it's like, okay, well, if you want to support Tin Man, this is what it's going to consist of.
It's a really different story.
Totally different and way more expensive from a sponsorship perspective. And that would kind of, I think, scare brands away. And then nothing out of it, like nothing came out of it at all. And that was super frustrating, like having multiple sponsors being like, yeah, we'd love to sponsor you. And then I got on a call and they're like, what about Tin Man? I was like, this is how much it's going to cost you. And they're like, okay, never mind. And then they just ghosted me after that. So I think getting out from underneath that Tin Man Elite umbrella is good for my personal brand moving forward. I think, to be honest, from like a sponsorship perspective, I didn't really want to be under the Adidas umbrella anymore. I feel like they weren't really doing us too many favors. And so I think in terms of how I wanted to progress and how I wanted to grow, the direction I thought I was going in terms of trying to become a world-class steeplechaser, I think there was better there would be better opportunities for me outside of Adidas. So, when the team as a collective kind of said, okay, this is what we want to do, we want to have this focus and we're going to try and see if we can continue with Adidas, I was like, I don't really want to be a part of that. But I was kind of a part of that decision that, you know, came to that conclusion of where the team wanted to go. So that in that sense, it was like a mutual split where it's like, I know this is good for the team. I know this is good for the people that want to stay on the team. I just don't really want to be involved, you know? So,
yeah. And I mean, it's things change over time. You know, I think you'll look back on your time with Tinman and it'll be like probably some of your fondest memories, you know, on delving into uncharted territory. But, you know, you've been doing this for quite a while now and you've taken it like a certain point, like being part of the team, coming off an Olympic year. Like it's often makes sense to make changes. And especially I think as something that I feel is like, as we get older as athletes, we're more, we do a better job at being able to recognize what we really need and what works best for us.
Totally.
And that's probably, it's natural to be, to want some more freedom or independence at that point.
Yeah, it wasn't a personal decision. It was like a business decision, you know, where it's like, this is, I think, going to be the best route for everybody. It wasn't at all like a, oh, I mean, I think everybody had frustrations about certain things or things that they didn't like, but at the end of the day, it was like, what's going to be the best for everybody and what's going to serve everybody, you know, the best. So it wasn't, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be here at all without Tin Man. They like provided me with an opportunity that nobody was willing to take on me. And I'm forever grateful for that. And I genuinely don't think I would be as the kind of runner I am today without them, because they took me under their wing and they let me train with them and they let me suck at running for a really long time and they just allowed me to get better. And, you know, I think it wasn't like it was all roses for us and behind the scenes. You know, I know they definitely had their like questions or frustrations about how it was running, especially early on. It's like, is this really somebody that we want to like represent this team when he's getting his shit rocked, you know, constantly? But they just, they let me be stubborn and they let me stick with it. And it's kind of gotten me to the place where I am now, where I do feel comfortable enough to be like, okay, I'm ready to go into those uncharted territories on my own and kind of allow myself to grow, I guess, outside of the team, you know. And in my eyes, it was a business decision. I mean, personally, in terms of like how we train every day, I'm still training with Drew and Sam every day. I'm still being trained by Jonah Mark. We link up with Reed a lot during his workouts, but I mean, more recently, not, because he's running Boston in a couple of weeks. So logistically, it's more or less the same, you know. It's just, I guess, the title that's associated with it. So it hasn't really felt like a whole lot's changed in terms of how to like my day-to-day goes with my training environment. I think it's everything outside of that that just feels a little bit hectic right now in terms of, okay, what am I supposed to do with my like life and sponsorships and brand partnerships? And so that's kind of why this newsletter came about, was just like, wait, this is actually like really hard to do and really hard to like accomplish, I guess, or get a sponsor and maintain. And so, yeah, it's allowed me a lot of time to self-reflect and think about everything as a whole.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's interesting you say that like it was hard to get out from under the Tin Man umbrella, but I would say, and I'm sure everyone would agree, like you actually like still developed a very strong personal brand in within Tin Man. And I think most of you guys did. Like, I think you did a really good job of still having a personal identity, which is cool now to see that you're kind of developing that. And like, I don't know, makes the rest of us.
Yeah, I feel like everybody had a great personal brand and everything, but I think when it came more to how do we kind of expand upon that? How do we, I guess, just like get the resources that we need to pursue the lives that we want to live, or for somebody like me, just survive? It was really hard to get that underneath that umbrella, because everybody would get their eyes wide when they're like, oh, we can have all of Tin Man Elite. And then they would start thinking too big. And then all of a sudden it was like, oh shit, this is too big. And then none of it happens at all. And so that was really tough. I think from I don't think my personal brand would have grown at all without Tin Man, for sure. I think that platform like allowed me to tell my story and allowed the team to tell my story in a lot of different ways, which is really great. And like I said, I don't think I would be in this position if I did get to the level I'm at running wise. I don't think like the personal brand would be there without the Tin Man platform. So it was,
they go hand in hand a bit.
For sure. Yeah. So, but like I said, I think I'm in a position now where it's okay, I kind of have some of that recognition among the running community. It's not ridiculous for me, I guess, from like a personal business, personal brand perspective, it's not ridiculous for me to say like I need to fly from the nest and start pursuing my own things.
Yeah. So when did you start thinking about sports marketing so much?
When I got dropped by my protein sponsor, and I thought how BS that was. Yeah.
No, fair enough. You got some good thoughts on it.
Yeah, I hate the term sports marketing, to be honest, because it just like reminds me of just like the people that run the budgets, you know? And like for me, it's like when I think sports marketing, I think the Adidas sports marketing team, and that doesn't always like leave like good thoughts in my head per se. I know everybody has different relationships with their brands, but it was just like the best way I think I can right now describe like just the business within running as a whole, and how, you know, mainly like I don't think I'm ready to be honest to tackle the large brand issues or, you know, fallacies, I guess, or whatever you want to call it. But I think from a small brand perspective, I've had enough interaction with these small brands to be like, there's just like that whatever we're doing right now is not working, or whatever they're doing right now is not working, and something needs to change, because I feel like if this is a problem for me, this is a problem for a lot of people in the sport, you know, kind of these, whether it's like up and coming or like kind of in this like limbo between like national class or world class, or even guys that are just under that national class, runners that are under that national class level, we're just scrapping for dollars with these brands that are willing to throw us a couple of pennies in exchange for kind of like a lot of work. And I get it. If that's how the game is and you want to play it, that's great. But I think I'm more arguing that the game should be different, and it could be more beneficial for probably the brands more than the athletes, you know? So, I think it's more of like just business in sport, and just like how brands can interact with athletes a lot better. And I don't think it's just like, I don't think it's exclusive to running. I think this is probably a big issue on larger scales with bigger sports too. So, to be honest, it's like, it was easy to talk about running in terms of sports marketing because I just have been living it, but I'd love to be able to explore other sports and, on larger scales, you know, it's like, is this a problem in the NBA? Is this a problem in golf? You know, like how does it scale between different sports, or maybe even like tennis? So yeah, sports marketing is just the best way I could put it.
Yeah. It's like, it's been a changing dynamic, I think, especially in the last 10 years or so, and then especially in the last 3 years when you start talking about NILs and stuff. I think the power of the individual has grown so much when it comes to promoting products or brands.
Totally.
And it's getting to the point, well, it's always been, it's been a thing for a while in running, but it's really, I think, going to become, it's not an issue at all. I don't see it as an issue at all, but there's an interesting dynamic between like pro athletes and influencers, which is something that I think like you've mentioned, but maybe you'll talk about more in the future. Do you believe that for a pro runner to be a pro runner now, they have to be an influencer in some point? And influencer is just, I'm just throwing that out of the term. It's like, not like I think influencer is the right word for it, but they have to, like, I guess, do you think like that's a necessary part of what we do or what we want to do with our jobs?
I think if you want to like sustain yourself in running and you don't have a contract that lets you live comfortably, and for everybody that means something different, or that's a different amount of money. But for a lot of people in my position where it's, I haven't, you know, won a national championship, I haven't made a world championship team, from a performance perspective, I haven't really lived up to a standard that a lot of brands want to, you know, give a contract to. And so you kind of have to look at it from a different angle. And it's like, okay, if these athletes want to sustain themselves and want to go for pro running in its fullest and not have a 9-to-5 job, yeah, you probably do have to do a lot of things that can be categorized under like the influencer kind of nature, you know, in terms of creating content, making your own brand deals and stuff like that. I think Ali Ostrander does a really good job at that, where she did have that like performance platform, I think, for a long time. She did have a lot of attention from that performance perspective. But when she took a step back from running and then came back into a competitive environment, I think she adapted really well and was like, this, you know, whether it was from a perspective of, oh, I need to make money, or, oh, I just want to tell my story and just be more transparent, like whichever angle that she decided to use or motivate her to do it, she's created an incredible platform that I think relates to just about any runner for on any level. And I think that's a scenario where it's, I wouldn't call Allie an influencer by any means. She's super competitive in running. And I think she'll continue to be super competitive, but it's allowed her to be, I guess, like more autonomous in terms of how she wants to pursue that professional running aspect. So, And I guess that's a little bit what I hope to get out of this newsletter in a sense, where it's like, I just like can't make these like ticky talky videos or like these Instagram reels.
I
just
the right way to do it.
Yeah. I just really struggle with it. Like I've thought about a YouTube channel. It's like, that's just something I have to like pull resources in from. And that's something I really need to think about. But this is something that I can do where I can put myself out there right now through my words. And I know it's not like all of a sudden I'm going to bring in a huge, like, you know, platform that garners attention from brands or anything like that. But it's something to start where it's like, let me just be a little bit more transparent about myself and what I think about running in the world. And it's just a different way of doing it, you know? And so I think everybody has to be a little bit, you know, if you want to sustain yourself in running, and just so you can only run and you don't have to work outside of that, you have to be creative in terms of how that works, because there's just not a lot of money for people in my position or I guess from my position down. It's just not lucrative at all. And there's only so long that you could, I guess, like live on scraps or like live close to that like threshold of just like putting up with living paycheck to paycheck, I guess, so to speak, or just like not really like preparing yourself well financially for like your future, you know, where it's just before you're like, okay, I got to like do something different, you know? So it's an interesting dynamic. And I don't think the industry is going to force people to do that, but it will reward people who do that. You don't have to be a full on influencer if you don't want to. But if it's like in Allie's case, if it's something that you enjoy, it's if it's sustainable and if it's something that is going to allow you to grow and think about the sport in a way that you want to think about it, in a way that's going to help you get better, then you, it's easy to go all in on that. So
yeah, I mean, it just makes logical sense at some point for brands to put money into a place where they know, like, if someone has a large following and they consistently post and consistently get views and engagement, that's what brands want. It makes sense to put money there. Performance is awesome, and that's always going to have such an appeal to for brands to put money to that as well. But yeah, the other side of it just makes complete sense. And then you get those athletes who are the complete package, and that's like
totally. And I think that's what like helped Tim Mann grow so well in the first place, was we were just a group of people. Or I mean, they started growing up even a year before I showed up. They were just doing the things that they wanted to do, and they expressed themselves in the way that they thought was the best way to express themselves, I guess, and they did what they thought was cool, and people caught on to that. And so it was just like a very natural thing. And I think brands really caught on to that idea and really liked it. And so it just like showed another level of authenticity early on when it came to our following. But then on the flip side, when those brands did start coming in and started wanting things out of us, started wanting those deliverables, those YouTube videos, those, you know, tech reviews, et cetera, it started becoming very diluted in terms of what was authentic and what was, okay, these guys are just getting paid for it, you know? And I think that's like a very fine line, where in reality, if you are supporting an athlete, especially in running, and you see them posting something about a brand or like some kind of ad, you should be thinking like, hell yes, they're getting paid. That's awesome. Yeah. Like I've seen like so many different like BS ads from runners on different channels, and it just like makes no sense.
And it's so obvious.
But I'm like, they're getting their bag, and that's good. Like after a while, I was like, okay, like they're getting paid to do this, and that's good, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think there should be some kind of support. It doesn't have to mean like you have to go buy it per se, but I think it's just like the nature of this right now is like, yeah, there's going to be a lot of things that don't really seem like it fits, and it may seem a little ingenuine, but at the same time, it's just like part of the hustle right now. So you have to just like be patient with that. But over time, I think there should be a change that allows partnerships to be a bit more genuine and authentic, you know? And I think at this point, I just keep going back to Allie, because that's the first thing in my head, but I guess we can, you know, talk about plenty of other people. I guess like Clayton Young is a YouTube channel I've been watching a lot recently, and where it's just like, there's ways for for brands to kind of like just slide in naturally and just be a part of this.
Yeah, like just like platform. Where you're going to support, you go do your thing.
Mm-hmm. So like for Clayton, just like Stride and Cadence, you know, it's like Stride, it's just like you show the data on the screen in real time.
It's,
you know,
very natural.
Yeah. It's not even like a, hey, wear this Stride pod. Here's my code, Clayton15. You know, it's just like, no, this data is just like genuinely helping me. And for people that are invested in things like that, sure, they're probably going to look into it, you know? So.
No, but people like that's, it actually is so impactful, I think, mm-hmm. for the brands. I mean, I would love to see the numbers of, Cadence is a good example. I feel like that series, just the fact that they sponsor it, would have done so much for them. I'm sure they got their money's worth.
It's the only reason why I know about it, you know?
It's crazy how much of an impact that stuff has. And I think it's been a thing in other sports in different, more unique ways. And yeah, I guess now it's coming more into running. I'm thinking of, especially, this is kind of random, but it's like, more extreme sports have had this kind of model where, you know, let's take, I'm trying to think of a brand that's just random, one that's not really competitive, but like, let's say North Face, mm-hmm. like they'll just sponsor like some good skiers to, and their goal would be like make a movie.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like that's the goal. And they put a shit ton of money into that. And then it seems to be really
successful.
That
kind of reminds me of like Red Bull, where it's just like,
Exactly.
And I think that focuses more on experience rather than selling product per se, where it's like...
No, they're not pushing like at all. It's just like...
You don't see a single can of Red Bull when the guy's jumping out of the plane in the stratosphere to do the biggest free dive in the world, you know, or whatever you want to call it. I'm totally blank. Sky jumping?
Skydiving?
Skydiving, sky jumping.
Same difference.
Yeah, there's not a single can of Red Bull in that video, you know, but you know it's a Red Bull video because you're doing extreme things. So I think that aspect.
I think you're right. It is those sports. Like, I feel like most professional surfers are just like paid to go like make surfing videos.
Skating.
Just because they're already doing it. Like,
climbers.
Just to exist.
Yeah,
you know,
just like just doing like, whatever they're
doing.
Well,
because at the end of the day, what it comes down to with a lot of this stuff is the storyline. And that's what having a brand giving you maybe upfront money and saying like, go do this. That's what it allows you to do, which doesn't happen in our current model of sponsorship as much. Clayton is doing it amazingly because he's having companies come to him and he's saying, all right, specifically, I'm going to film this build. Would you like to support it? Mm-hmm. The storyline is there with these other ones that we're talking about. Yeah. I've seen climbing ones where it's like the whole point of the movie or the film is to climb one thing. And it's like, obviously like that's such a good storyline. And so it really is. And like On is trying to do it with us a lot. There's so many challenges with this. It's not easy to just go do by any means, but that's what brands want. They want the greatest storylines. And the good thing about storylines, coming back to talking about someone like Ali O, is like when you're able to create great storylines, people really resonate with them and it becomes really authentic. And it changes the dynamic where not everything becomes about winning the race, because there's a lot of value in the story of every single athlete in that field generally. And so I think it really is about brands finding a way to bring out those stories for the athletes. And even going all the way back to Tin Man, if I just look at it from like an outside perspective and kind of based on what you described, it's kind of the trajectory or the arc, it makes sense to me that Tin Man was so, people bought into it so much more easily, maybe back in 2018 and 2019, because the storyline was so good and so easy to support because it was a new thing. It was an up and coming team. It was a underdog story.
Mm-hmm.
And that was such a good story to tell. And then maybe beyond that, it became like,
sorry, George sipping out of that matcha is making me laugh, bro. The little straw.
It made a little sound.
I like couldn't look at you without smiling. But what you're saying is totally right. I think it's so much more genuine and it's so much better received, like we see in these extreme sports, and with Clayton and probably Ali in some sense. I guess Ali is more short form content than a lot of what we're talking about with the storytelling. But I think it's really good for the athlete to have a direction and allow the brands to hop in on that, rather than an athlete just kind of like being like, yeah, I'm just willing to do whatever the brand wants me to do.
Well, you know? As someone that has tried and failed to run a YouTube channel many times, I can tell you it's a lot of work to do on your own. So
totally.
It takes a team.
Yeah, it takes a lot. And but I think as long as you have that kind of like direction, I guess, in terms of where you want to go. Like, I'm sure there was probably some things that Clayton was like, he's like, I probably can't do this unless I have some kind of financial backing from somebody. And then those things.
Well, yeah, he's someone full time.
Come into play. Amazing. Yeah. I mean, I can't imagine how much that guy charges for videos because they're super, like, they're cinematic, you know, they're really good. And
bro, I can't believe how committed Clayton is to it. I like when I watched, for example, the Houston one, like his videographer is in his room at 4 a.m. yeah, filming him get ready. I'm like, dude, that's the last thing. Like, I'm all for getting content. Dude, I can't imagine having, I guess they have a really good relationship. So that's what makes it work.
But I mean, that's what, how it was with us with Max too, where it was just like kind of seamless to have him around 24/7 if we needed to. I feel like it's just so much harder when you try and, I guess your style is more vlog type than having somebody follow you around with a camera. So just like all of that setup, I'm sure is just like, could be exhausting after a while where you're like,
no, you need someone else if you're going to do it in that way.
Yeah, for sure. So, yeah, it's really cool to see that. And I guess it just like, it amplifies the story a little bit more. Like I'm so like, Clayton keeps saying that he wants to like break American records. And before I started watching this channel, I was like, there's no chance if Clayton said that he wanted to do that, that he'd do that. And then I watch his channel, I'm like, I kind of want him to break the American record. you know, like I think it's sick. Like he's so excited about it. And I get excited with him. Like I was just watching.
That's the power.
It's the power. So, anyways, I'm trying to do that through my words.
Yeah. Well, even closer to home, like assuming you're on the journey to get a bunch of sponsors, I'm hoping this conversation's happening. Are you like taking this into those conversations? Like, do you feel like even like better prepared now when you like chat to these sponsors about like,
no, not even a little. Yeah, I guess with like a big shoe sponsor, like quote unquote big brand shoe sponsor, I think it's like the system is kind of catered more towards the agent having the conversations. And so that's something that I guess and it's also something I have zero experience in. Like I came onto the team for $0 and then eventually we kind of had like a business set up where we could pay the athletes and that was pretty seamless because they're like, this is what we have for you. And I'm like, great, that's better than what I had before, you know? And then that kind of grew and evolved over time as times changed and as kind of like my expectations of like how I needed to survive changed and or just like where I could fit in with the business side changed. And now it's just kind of like I kind of feel like I'm at the mercy of the brands and it's just like I don't have a lot of negotiating power, to be honest, but I think I do feel a little bit more prepared in terms of if I were to go to a brand like a smaller brand and ask for maybe like a smaller partnership, I think I'd be better prepared in terms of what I wanted and what direction I wanted to go in. And I think I'd be much more willing to say no to stuff like that. Like the protein sponsor that I had, if I had the mindset now that I did back then, I would have said, no, I'm not doing this. Like this makes no sense. I don't care what kind of money you have. Like it's going to be, it's just like, just the conversations that we were having were just so, I guess, hypothetical that when it came down to it, it went from like purely hypothetical to like super literal all of a sudden. And I was actually kind of warned about this where I was like, oh yeah, there's not even a contract. There's like not a lot of strings attached. It's kind of like, we're just going to work together along the way. And it was actually Max who told me, he's like, be careful about that. Cause to be honest, like with partnerships like that, like whatever you do, it's not going to be enough. Like it's, all the content you're going to make, it's never going to be enough. I don't care what you do. I don't care if you sell anything. It's just never going to be enough. And lo and behold, $40 of sales was not enough. So some BS right there. But yeah, so I think when it comes to like those kind of things that I need to kind of like broker myself, I guess I feel a little bit better prepared. And I guess I have a better understanding of myself going into that. But when it comes to working with my agent, in terms of a big brand, I kind of do feel like old version of me with Tin Man, where it's like, I'm kind of at the mercy of what they're willing to offer. I don't have a lot of power when it comes to negotiating or like, I guess a lot of leverage per se, because I'm not at that level to utilize that. And that's okay. But at the same time, I can also say no, if I don't like it. So that was one of the things that I think Drew had expressed, through a Tempo Journal article, after he signed with ASICS, was he, and something that he had expressed to me a lot was just like, he would say, I would rather retire than like take under a certain amount because I have to support my family. And if running can't do that, I'll figure it out somewhere else, you know? And that's super impactful. That's super powerful where it's like, that allows a brand to get on board with what you're doing, like we were talking about, even if it is maybe a little bit more, like obviously Drew has like a very impactful pursuit and he has a very impactful story. But at the end of the day, he's like, I got a family, I got to take care of them. And a brand comes in, ASICS, and says, we're willing to do that with you. And so that makes it an impactful partnership. And I just don't really have that. Like, but you know, like I can say no to certain things if it just doesn't seem like a good fit, I guess.
Well, it definitely takes time. Like you talk about getting like leverage, and the reality is being a social media person, whatever, having followers, like that's like most people's dream job these days. So it's a very competitive field. And so, yeah, brands, if you can talk about like all the things that you can do, but then, you know, they can just look at the numbers and say, well, this other person has 50K, this person has 100K, this other says 200K, you know, and that's kind of what you're up against when you start getting into that world. And so it's very competitive and totally. Very hard, and it takes a lot of time and effort. It's not just a matter of doing it. You have to be very, it's just not easy. I mean, it's not easy at all.
I think there is like a huge wave of like running influencers or running influence right now too, especially with like, I think run clubs are like really opening up a lot of people's eyes to like, just the running community, and that comes with people that want to extract as many dollars as they can out of it. And I think there's a lot of brands that come in that aren't running, that are more running adjacent than running focused, that come in and say, oh, we can make money off of this. And it's really hard to like wrap your mind around that idea of like, oh, they're taking money that could be mine. Mm-hmm. But the way I've tried to think about it recently is like, no, there are like I would say most of these influencers are like actually helping expand like the scope of running and
the
allowing
is getting bigger.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And it's allowing, it might not be for us, unfortunately, but down the road, it might make running a more lucrative sport for its athletes, you know? But, I mean, at the same time, like you think like I've tried, this is something I've thought about, and this is me talking out loud right now. It's like, how many basketball players in the NBA, how many football players in the NFL have like shoe contracts?
Not that many.
Not a lot, right?
So different.
Like do they have sponsors? Like I'm sure
a lot do.
A handful do.
But that's actually a different dynamic in terms of the business of that
for
sport
sure,
compared
yeah.
to our sport.
Because the system itself pays the athletes.
And their teams have sponsors.
Yeah, but when you think about it, it's like, yeah, the teams that got sponsors too. So anyways, I'm thinking out loud. I'll save it for the next newsletter.
We'll do a little drafting, a little brainstorming session. Get ready for it.
Every other episode of Coffee Club now is just going
to
be a brainstorm,
just try
like
and
out
some,
loud.
Get some ideas out there. Well, we've talked about the sport now and the marketing side of it in a very in-depth theoretical sense so far. Maybe we get more into something that's, you know, actually seeing it being put into practice. So we jump over to Grand Slam, which this is absolutely huge. I didn't even talk about it in the preview in the beginning of the episode, but this is one day after the first ever Grand Slam taking place in Jamaica. It was 3 days of track action. And overall, just to sum it up, I'd say very mixed reviews across the board. Some pros, some cons, some funny moments, lots of funny moments, actually. Definitely some takeaways that I think hopefully the advantage of them being this small private entity is that they're able to take to rapidly change and improve upon different things. But I think we just get into it and go through all like little pros and cons. What were your guys' initial thoughts and takeaways from Grand Slam? And we're talking about, I think as athletes, we would all love to be absolutely competing in it without a doubt. It seems like a good thing. Lots of money, obviously. But more as fans of the sport, what are we thinking?
I loved how the first impression of the weekend after we talked about it last week was the drip check.
Yeah, that was hilarious.
Which I feel like we should just start by roasting Grand Slam for the funny stuff and the cons, and then we finish with what we like about it, because there's still lots to like about it. But the fact that they started with the drip check was by Drip. Apparently, there's a water company or something. Like,
yeah, that's they were a big sponsor. They all had the cans. Drip. Yeah, big.
They have like hold around. Speaking of unauthentic,
are you you're talking about like when they posted about everybody's outfits before, right?
Yeah, and right when they posted them, because Sam Parsons said immediately when I saw it, I was like, oh, we're gonna have to do a Drip Chick review on the pod next week.
Yeah.
And then an hour later, I saw Sam Parsons reviews.
Yeah, Sam did a pretty good job. Which,
honestly, that was some good stuff from Sam, actually.
Yeah, calling Grant Fisher's outfit like
the third Ratcliffe
the third Ratcliffe brother was so funny. No spoilers. I didn't watch the last episode.
No, neither have I.
Yeah, shout out to Kerr for supporting the podcast with that really, really good looking green suit.
Dude.
Yeah. I don't want to make too much fun of him because he had a rough one. He had a rough week. That suit was the beginning
of the end.
That was funny. That was the first impression of the weekend.
Yeah.
The suit was ridiculous.
Yeah. I think all the outfits were interesting. Maybe they need a stylist in Miami. Like they just hire a local stylist and they just like remember what, like when you guys like just got your little canoe club.
Yeah. Trip.
Like that was fun when you did that was before fun, sound
but
running.
Like still, I don't know whether they're still trying to make something that is maybe relevant for a very, very small amount of athletes applied to all. And when I say that, I'm speaking about like Noah Lyles, when he turns up to a meet and he's wearing this super expensive fancy outfit, it's like, you know, he actually loves it.
Yeah.
Like, you know, that's his passion.
It's right.
Not his passion maybe, but you know, that's actually authentic to him. If whether you like it or not, you know, I look at, sometimes I don't know if anyone else would know this, but there's like videos you can see online of just like football teams like turning up to, they'll have the British, like the English soccer team, it'll be like them turning up to camp, or there'll be like the French team turning up to camp, and they're all like wearing like the sickest outfits.
Yeah.
It's like so cool to watch. That's not, we're not that.
Like the NBA does that too, yeah, with NBA their little like tunnel walks going into the stadium, you know, where it's like the guys that do the crazy outfits are the ones that are going to keep doing it. They never show like,
yeah,
I guess like the, I don't know how to put it. They don't show the guys
that don't care about it.
So they're like, yeah. They don't show those guys, but there are a lot of guys that do it. So they show that. And I think that's totally true where it's like, let's not like try and force it if it's not there.
It was like they were trying to force people to care about.
Like force the culture, you know, we don't have to force this culture. Like I think people will show up in the ways that they want to. But yeah, the distance runners outfits are always great.
Yeah, they were very,
it's also just like, and it makes me laugh a little bit, especially with like the Adidas stuff, just because it hits a personal note where it's just like, the Adidas athletes are just like looking through their distros being like, what do I have that could be like somewhat respectable? Cause I have to wear Adidas, where it's like, you don't have to wear sports style, like kind of fashion outfits, whatever. To like Grant didn't, that shirt wasn't Nike, you know, but like Adidas does give us,
where did he find that shirt? Then? Adidas, where did he get that thing?
Adidas gives us some like Adidas original stuff that like can kind of pass off as fancier, but like, you don't have to wear that if you're like going out, and it's fun. Sometimes it's funny. Just,
you could see the athletes trying to wear like one thing of their brand,
right,
with the rest of their outfit, just to let them know that they were staying loyal.
Yeah.
Amidst the,
yeah, that was goofy for sure. I didn't pay too much attention to that part, but I scrolled through and I'm like, okay,
this is the thing.
We got the weekend going. Here we go.
That was my first impression.
Next funny thing. Which, dude, I don't want to come off as like, we're going to say good things later. I don't want to be like, oh, dude, that's just haters.
We start with some roasts.
I cannot believe how much of a deal they made out of no one wearing bibs. And then they gave everyone bibs that were not functional at all. You got Wanyoni holding his bib on the line, trying to hold it on because the wind was blowing it off, getting handed pins from off camera to pin it on. And then, dude, like, come on, guys.
They know that every single, like, women's, like, speed suit tops have a zip straight down the middle. So all of them, their bibs, they've had to, like,
just rip down the middle.
They're, like, ripped down the middle. So it's, like, two pieces, and they've stuck them on so that to try and get their name to, like, still line up.
I think the Instagram post was the best, where they were, like, personal ID tags for each and every athlete.
They literally paid like Citrus Mag or whatever, how it works, to make a post about no bibs, showing the bibs that they're wearing. Like, guys, do we need to get a dictionary out? Do you not, just because it sticks on It's still a bib. Like
Joe Hale commented on it. Like, I'm pretty sure that's still a bib. It's probably got like 1,000 likes by now.
And the thing is, like, this is just something that should have probably been a non-issue, but it's because they can be quoted. You can see over 10 times they said, one of the good things about Grand Slam is that there's no bibs.
Yeah, they just kept doubling down. I love it.
It's so funny.
And then, like, I don't know what the bibs achieved. Just the names?
The colors they had,
the color coding was not useful, though.
Like, I didn't mind it, but I think it was not that impactful. It wasn't that helpful to differentiate between challenges, races, and whoever had won the first event. Like, there's logic in that. But
yeah,
it wasn't, like, the biggest... Yeah, wasn't necessary, I guess. Didn't really matter at the end of the day, but
no.
Yeah, I just found it so funny.
It's just fun.
Yeah.
You can never stray too far away from the norm, you know?
Well.
But yeah. What I thought was interesting, I guess maybe this like plays into the bibs a little bit, was while they were announcing, maybe this was on the third day, they kept calling people that were racing that like were from the same country as teammates. Like they referred to Akele and Gebrehiwet as teammates. They referred to Dylan Cooper.
I also noticed that. I thought I misheard that.
It was a bit weird.
And it got me thinking a little bit about like, are they trying to create some kind of like, because obviously like you associate jerseys with the teammates, right? Where it's like,
yeah,
they're all wearing different kits. Like, you know, I think the 1500 had like one of every brand, basically. There was not two people from the same brand almost. And I guess for Wenyoni and A-Rot. But anyways, like it was just super interesting to think about that, where it's like, are they trying to create like storylines of like, it's easy in the Olympics when you talk about like the Ethiopians or the Kenyans working together, like, you know, the Americans working together, and it, you know, we do have, or like even like Moroccans, like when, you know, people would help tow El Garouj along to kind of make it like a faster race so he could win. You know, that's an obvious like sign of teamwork, but it was really interesting to like hear them talk about it in this sense, because like, I don't think Gebrehiwet and Bekele were working together at all.
I think it was missing some subtlety and nuance, because I think you could accurately just refer to them as countrymen, and then that's a nice association. And then a great example is Hagos and Telhoun, because they were leading the race by a long way and they were working together initially, trading off laps. But yeah, they're not teammates. It's just like they're countrymen on the same page that they wanted to make it a fast race. So I thought that was like, yeah, not the best to say they're teammates when they're not.
Yeah, but even after the 5K, when you see three Americans kicking, winning with 100 to go, all I thought about that afterwards and what I told Drew while we were in DC, I was like, there's no way the Africans are going to let this happen for the 3K. Like, they're not going to leave it to a kick this time. So I guess in a sense, I thought of it from like a teammate perspective too.
But it's not really like that, because I don't think it has necessarily anything to do with the fact that the fastest guys in the field were from Africa, that they would want it to be fast. Because I think in a different scenario, let's throw Jakob in there. If he had gotten out kicked, this is like completely hypothetical, then you're like, oh, Jakob's going to go make it fast now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I guess it's just.
I think it's the same as that though. It would be like saying...
Just
the people that are kicked.
Yeah.
You just suggest that those guys are not going to let it happen again, whoever it is, whether it's Jakob or whether it's a few Ethiopians.
Yeah, but I guess it doesn't. I'm just saying it doesn't really have anything to do with...
them being teammates?
No. Yeah.
Yeah. What if they... what if Grand Slam got Jakob and Nordis and they called them teammates?
Yeah, that could be fun. That would maybe lead to a lawsuit, potentially. I don't know. I don't know. That wouldn't go over well at all.
But anyways, that was my two cents.
That is a very interesting takeaway though, because I did notice that as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Back to the agenda. We were on bibs.
Yeah. What else do we have? Should we move on to, I don't know, like there's things that were actually done poorly, I would say, with it, because we're going all the way around to the positives. The current format, I mean... this is something where everyone can have their complete own opinion. And I would really love to hear in the comments from all the track fans out there who watched it, actually what you thought. But I couldn't sit through like 3 days of 2 to 3 hour sessions of what was not that much racing and a lot of dead time.
Mm-hmm.
And then a lot of the races, in my opinion, were pretty boring. So it wasn't even like the rewards weren't really there. I had one of the days where I had... I was like really late. I don't know. I'd been out running or something. And then I came and then on Peacock, I was just able to skip through everything. And yeah. I was like, oh, this is great.
Yeah, that's what I did every day.
I was like, this is so good. I can just skip through everything to the races.
Yeah.
And it's like, there's fundamentally something wrong with that because then you compare it to different sport and it's like, in no other sport that has a 2 or 3 hour broadcast, would you ever be able to do that? Would you be able to sit down at the replay and just like skip through 80% of it and be like satisfied?
No.
Knowing that you'd seen basically all you needed to see.
Like,
yeah, I think there's very few people that would look at that and say, yeah, three days felt right.
Yeah.
Like, apart from maybe the guys who ran the 5K.
Yeah.
who wanted the day off. Like,
but even then, they didn't need it.
Even then, they fucking didn't need it because they ran so slow. Like, they easily could have come back the next day. And no one else who's running like 100 or 200 is like, I should really have a day off tomorrow.
Yeah. I don't know.
2 days.
I don't think I minded the 3 day format because I could skip through everything. And I basically consumed about 45 minutes worth of content over the span of like a 3 hour broadcast every day.
Yeah.
Not even, probably like 40 minutes, to be honest. I didn't even watch the sprints, like, or half of them. Like, to be honest, like, the concept of like pure racing for the sprints was just like, they're just running as hard as they can, anyways. You know, like, I think as a distance runner, it was more intriguing for me to see how these distance races played out. And I think what really set the tone for me to like the weekend was Nikki winning the 800. I thought that was insane, running 158. And I was like, oh shit, all the 800 runners just came in last in their own event. Like, this is
a completely different form. Unpredictable.
Of racing. Yeah. And I like that versus the sprints were just like more or less.
Yeah.
Like, Sydney and Gabby are going to win. I guess from the men, there wasn't a dominant figure.
Kenny.
Yeah, that's true. Kenny is on fire.
I mean,
sprinting isn't affected by not having paces, not having wave lights, not tactics. That's not ever going to change a sprint race. They're going to be the same.
The sprinting
all the time.
Events were hurt because they weren't able to get the fields that they probably wanted.
Right.
They had obviously amazing athletes out there, but we've already talked a lot, like on the run this morning or even yesterday, about how amazing the 800, 1500 meter group was. On both the men's and women's, but in particular men's side. And a lot of that is just to do with the fact that they were able to get literally the best medalists. Like, the three medalists in the 1500, I think two of the medalists in the 800, and then Bryce is, like, it's just, that's so much of this event working does kind of hinge on, having that level of competition, because then you really buy and you care, and it is really like the best and there's actual good. But when you have, Sydney McLaughlin is such an interesting figure because she's the greatest of all time at her event by so much. And obviously she's so popular, but when you watch her races, it's like boring in a way. Like, and it's amazing to watch her race and compete and do her thing. It's so amazing. And she's a great athlete, but watching both the races, it was like, oh, she just ran 2 seconds slower than her PB and she won by 2 seconds.
Yeah. Yeah, I think watching her perform in her element during championship season is like no brainer. I'm going to like tune in to watch. But watching early season races is just like, all right, she's going to run 53 and she's still going to win by a country mile, you know? So, and once I watched the first day, I was like, I don't need to watch the 400, you know? And don't get me started about the long hurdles where it's a 400 hurdles and then a flat 400, or like for the men's short hurdle or for the one. Sorry, the short hurdles, is it 110 hurdles and then 100?
100 flat, yeah.
I think that's, 800, 1500 by far, like, I think the best set of events that everybody.
It's the right dynamic.
Everybody can be a part of. Like,
it's what we expected would be the most entertaining and what ended up being the most entertaining by far. And I think a big part of that is, like we're saying, everything 400 and below in April is just the same as it's going to be months later, except they're a bit slower.
Right.
Whereas, like, there's no unpredictability in what they're doing because they're all just trying to run as hard as they can.
Yeah, just in their lane.
Whereas 8 and 15, early season, maybe they're not as fit as they're going to be in a couple months, but you get the unpredictability of an actual race. A bunch of people competing against each other, and you get, like, the women's 8:15 group was freaking amazing.
Yeah, it was insane. Yeah, I loved it. I think the interesting part that is more nuanced than anything else and won't really be, I guess, as grasped onto by the non like hardcore track fan is, you know, for example, in the women's short hurdles category, there was a challenger that won the whole slam. She won the 110 hurdles and I guess did well enough in the 100. I didn't watch it, the 100 part, but she was a challenger and she won. And that makes an interesting dynamic where, you know, they had Jasmine Camacho Quinn, I think, who is just like a multiple time Olympic world championship medalist, probably just wasn't sharp because she's getting ready to race and like championships in September, you know? And I think, you know, when we say Josh Kerr didn't race as well, where it's like, it's an interesting dynamic is like, does he want to be like sharp right now where he's doing that? So it definitely like leaves a lot of people vulnerable, especially like these big names. And it puts a lot of, I think it takes a lot to go out there and race when you know you're not at your best. Granted, like in the 8:15, not everybody's at their best then because they're all at the same, they all have the same objectives at the same level of talent. But it could be interesting where like there could be somebody who's like, I'm peaking in May because I'm going to get in the Grand Slam and I'm going to collect my check and I don't give a heck how I do at Worlds, you know? I get paid way more than that.
That's actually something that I like about it, to be honest, because I think a league format is only going to work in our sport if you have to show up X amount of times in a year. Like, that's like the first thing. Like, you're committing to show up. And then by the reality of that, it means that you're not always going to be able to show up 100%. And I think that's a good thing because I think it does lead to entertainment and it leads to interesting storylines between from like meet to meet. And I think that's just necessary. I think it is interesting though. And like now, you know, Josh Kerr has a baseline and hopefully he improves from here. And that'll be a really good storyline if it does play out like that,
right,
you know,
yeah.
Which I think it's a good thing.
It can be. Yeah.
Because I agree with you that this was the first time that we've seen a lot of these absolutely amazing athletes struggle in certain ways, you know, like people got really exposed in a way that we've never really seen in the sport before because normally they just wouldn't race.
Knew you weren't ready.
You saw it in probably all of the events. There were people who you were like, oh, wow, like that wasn't good. But then it's like, well, there's probably a reason for it. And, you know, hopefully they're okay. Like they're not dealing with injury or something like that and they'll progress throughout the season.
Right.
But I think it's necessary.
Yeah.
And could lead to more interesting storylines,
yeah,
to be honest.
I think that's what they're trying to do at the end of the day is just like amplify the athlete storylines. And I think that's the product. And I think that's what makes it interesting. Just as you watch any other sport, you're going to focus in on the athlete rather than, I guess, like just the pure performance side of it. Because, you know, there's good tennis players that have awful days and then they come back and they have incredible days and win tournaments, and you just all they do is think about, or like all the people will think about is like, oh my gosh, like how bad they played early on, or at this point they came back, they were resilient, and they
did the pressure like the in our sport, especially if you're one of these athletes that is a racer, like you're at that level, there's so much expectation and pressure because, you know, you look at someone that came like third and fourth and people are looking at them and being like, wow, they didn't race that well. But you know, I think that's something that maybe will change over time because I look at other sports and I feel like there's a certain level of maybe a little bit more, like you can come fifth and people be like, wow, that's really good that you came fifth in that. I don't know. I'm just thinking, I always think of cycling and I'm just like seeing these early results and there's people that are coming fifth and people are like, wow, they're having an amazing season.
Right.
And they're coming fifth, you know, it's like, so I just feel like that should be maybe more okay, but maybe, I don't know, maybe that's a good thing in our sport that it is such a fine line between like success and failure. I don't know if that's a good thing or not, but yeah, I think definitely our main takeaway is that the 800, 1500 group absolutely delivered. So well done on signing all the athletes that were signed to those groups so far. And yeah, some awesome, awesome results. And then everything, even then you go up to we talked about some of the issues with the shorter stuff, and then the 3K, 5K group still, last week we talked about some of the potential problems that were going to come up with the 3K, 5K group, and I think some of them did happen. It was just like two races that were, on the women's side, they're just both races.
So
they're just bloodbaths.
Oh gosh, yeah.
And they were played out It's very, very similar, and you could only see a little bit of the field. The men's one introduced some interesting potential issues where Grant won the 5K in the slowest 5K that those guys have run in 10 years, and then it meant that in the 3K, he didn't have to try to win the race, which I think
seems like an error.
Doesn't seem right. It doesn't seem right. It seems like that is not the best product you're providing, that someone is able to do that. And so,
and know that there's absolutely nothing to be gained by winning the 5K. He makes no more money. There's 3K. No bonus. There's no ranking, anything. He like nothing to be gained by beating those two guys.
Yeah.
Which like, then yeah, is like, there's got to be something wrong with that.
Because I found myself not caring as much about the Grand Slam. I think this is natural. I don't think you're ever going to care about who wins the Grand Slam overall as much as you will be able to get invested in the individual races, if that makes sense. Like, I'm not watching that second race and being like, oh, like, who's going to come first, second, third, fourth in the Grand Slam? I'm like watching the race and being like, oh, that's sick that Hagos has dropped the field. Like,
yeah,
you know, and like, it is like, does add some extra intrigue, the point system and all that. But yeah, you definitely want to have it set up so that every race is a race.
Absolutely. I mean, that makes sense because you want to watch something entertaining. You don't want to make it entertaining by having to do a calculation on something that's not actually,
I guess,
occurring.
I guess the context, like if you think about the men's 3K and the women's 3K, they basically played out in very similar lights in terms of there were two people that sprinted to the front and just kind of maintained that lead throughout the whole race. But we didn't even talk, like we said, women's 3K was boring, but then it's like, oh, the men's 3K had an entirely different race within this race. And I think it made it a little bit more interesting where it was
true.
Like it is a bit of different tactics, and, you know, it kind of reminds me of, I guess, golf, for example. Like you can have like a spectacular first day and then a couple of off days, but I guess that like performance over the span of multiple days makes it interesting. I think the problem is that, like, I don't know if eight guys is enough to have in a 5K or a 3K, maybe, where it was just like, you kind of know exactly what's going to happen. Like, if you put more people in there, maybe it makes it a bit more interesting of like, I have no freaking clue what points, who's at. I can't do these calculations in my head right now. I just got to focus on like competing and winning the race, you know? And the more people you add, the more dynamics are going to happen, the more unpredictability, maybe.
Yeah.
Versus 8:15, I feel like eight people was a really good. That was like a good sweet spot number that worked out well. But yeah, the 5K was just like spread out, or the 3K, 5K was just kind of like, for the most part, spread out, especially for the women.
Where too much, like, context.
This is boring, you know?
It would have actually been really a really cool storyline if Grant had ended up like getting out kicked by someone from that pack and then Hagos had won the overall. That would have changed it a lot, I guess.
Yeah.
In terms of like
it would have made it way more exciting.
The excitement of it.
Yeah.
But it was just like, in the moment, it's like, well, Grant's just racing for third.
Yeah. But I guess at that point, like, yeah, I don't know.
Then it's basically like a heat. Yeah. It was a final on day one and a heat on day three.
Backwards. But yeah.
I mean, it's obviously not that important because it's only been one ever, but I still question whether they need a 5K at all.
That seemed to be the conversation in DC amongst the racers. It's like, why do we even have this?
Yeah. They just shouldn't have like the long distance there.
They're repeating every damn event in the sprints. Just repeat a 1500. Make the 3K guys run a 1500.
Oh, yeah.
I think I might have said that last week, too.
Well, last week we talked about how it'd be cool to have that group do the 1500 and the 5K because those are different enough events.
Yeah. I think that's almost the main issue, is that the, like we saw in the 8:15 how different the results were. And that's cool to see how like different those athletes are. And then the 3K, 5K was really a similar athlete would do well in both.
Yeah, like it's a, so one of Grant's quotes that he said after, which, I mean, good for him that he's on top of the world right now. And like, he is that good and he is this confident. I think he said something along the lines of, yeah, I feel like no one can drop me right now and no one can outkick me. But it's like,
yeah. In it's those like, events, for sure.
In those events.
Not in a 1500.
But yeah, and if they were racing a 1500, that would be different enough that it would change things. You know, like, you know, that would maybe move the scales in favor, more in favor of different athletes, like just Kupetier, for example, yeah, or someone.
We see it in the sprints anyways. I mean, isn't the short sprints category the 100 and the 200, and then the long sprints is the 200 and the 400?
Yeah.
Like, why do we have two different 200 races? Like, is, I don't know, maybe there's a way we can, I think maybe it'd be more interesting where it's like, what if we got the short sprinters and the long sprinters to race against each other, you know?
Oh,
it's
dude, like, are you saying the short distance and the long distance actually run the 1500 together?
Yeah.
those guys, amazing. That's actually a 16 man race, but they're actually only competing against.
It's like a super bonus event.
Yeah.
And that's where you get the most points.
It's worth double points.
Amazing.
I think we just created a new product.
And then they split and do one shorter and one longer.
Yeah.
That'd be amazing.
They can race three times throughout the weekend. 5K guys in the 800, then they all race the 5K, 800 guys in a 5K, and then they meet together for the 1500 on the last day. Guys, I don't know. I think that's actually like not too bad.
Yeah.
Well, make Bryce Hopple run a 5K.
The thing is, one thing I think to give context.
Don't think you could pay him enough.
Yeah, no, definitely not. One thing to give context is I don't want it to seem like we're coming off too negative or too harsh on them because, and I probably should have said this before we even started roasting them. This is the first of its kind. Like, it's the first time that, I mean, it's not the first track meet ever. There's certain things that you know are going to work and not work. But, you know, it's assumed that this is, for now, at least like a 2-year project. And there's got to be certain leeway and there's going to be certain patience and leeway to be able to make mistakes and change them. I guess, hopefully they are listening to the podcast and
I mean, the product
are having some meetings and hopefully they can make some changes. I'll be concerned if they don't change anything.
Right. Yeah. I think they are consistently going to change things. Maybe not from like in terms of like the setup that they have this year, but if they don't just kind of like take in the feedback and use it in some way to kind of evolve. I mean, like the reason why like some of these sports and events are so big is because it's just like a long-standing tradition, you know? And I think if you can, that's the only part I'm concerned about right now is that's like,
how long's the money going to last?
Yeah. Like this is such a big, like,
yeah, that's our concern as well.
Like, I feel like the first like big golf tournaments just started off as like local guys just playing against each other. And it just grew and grew and grew. And that's where the money came in after that was like, okay, now this is a huge product because the investors saw it. Like, this is like, we have an idea. So the investors came in, but after a while, like depending on what they believe is like a return on that investment, you know, it might not pan out because of whatever.
I like that analogy a lot because one thing that I was saying annoyed me the most was how much every single person talked about the money.
Yeah.
From the across the board, the Instagram, the commentators, the athletes. I think it's really cool. The money I think is amazing. I think it's awesome. But at some point it's like, okay, well, so you guys make a lot of money, but like, and that's cool, but that's not entertaining. Like that doesn't sustain entertainment. Just like how much money is on the line. Like what sustains entertainment is the product, the actual racing itself.
Totally.
And I was just like, come on guys, like let's talk about something else for a little bit. Let's like, let's find some other positives to talk about. That's not just like how much money everyone is making because As we mentioned, that's not going to last forever. Like it's not going to, the money is not going to last forever unless the other stuff is able to be up to standard as well. Because the amount of money it sounds like they're putting into it, at some point it's going to have a return. And I don't know what their timelines are with that, but at some point it will have to.
Yeah. It's funny because somebody posted like Grant Fisher is $100,000 richer. And like somebody posted that in our team group chat, and then I said like, well, I'm $200 richer after Cherry Blossom this weekend. Why don't I get a graphic about that? And I made my own graphic, like Joey Berry is $200 richer. I just threw some text over a photo of me.
Yeah.
Just ready to slap that on Instagram. Yeah. Like 15th place at the Cherry Blossom 10 miler, $200. Like doesn't cover the flight. But at least he has the money. Yeah, I think the flaunting of money is it's an interesting thing. And I guess in our sport, it's super impactful, but like in every other sport, like it's like the Masters is like this weekend or next. It's like, these guys are playing for like $5 million for the win.
Yeah.
You know?
If you're going to talk about money so much and it's like, well, yeah, let's look at the other sports.
Yeah. So, I think it's a good start for sure. but they don't, yeah, it's not like on day two of the Masters, they're like, all right, this putt could cost this guy $5 million. You know, it's just like at the end, he's like, and now has won the purse of, I don't know, they don't even mention it half the time. Everybody just knows, like, this is a prestigious event. There's so much more.
And it makes sense that they make that much money. You know what I mean? Because it's the biggest thing about, like, everyone knows how many people are paying attention to it.
Also,
they don't need,
like,
to talk about it.
I think there's more pride on the line than money, to be honest. Like, sure, like, it's great when that check hits your bank
account.
That's
what it should be.
But you get 10th place and you still win, like, $750,000 or something like that. You know, you get a lot of money if you play, if you even, like, make the cut after the first day or the first 2 days. So it's like,
I think partly it matters less to those guys.
Yeah.
Because of how much they're already making, though.
True. But, like, they come to the, this, I don't think this is a hot take.
No, you're right.
Every single person that showed up to Grand Slam track was like, I could get a big check out of this. Nobody that shows up to the Masters is like, I want to win, so I win a lot of money. They're like, I want to win the Masters. I want that green jacket over me.
Yeah. So, no, the goal is to have it about winning the race and the pride, not about the money, because an easy comparison is like the Olympics. Mm-hmm. Like, everyone would still race the Olympics if there was zero prize money. And that would still be the biggest, the biggest thing you could win in our sport with no prize money.
Yeah, but granted, there's no draw in the first place for the athletes unless there is some kind of money online. But over time, it's not sustainable, you know? So
Yeah, I guess you got to build to that level where it means something just being
the good thing about
champ.
Like the first Grand Slam is that depending on how it looks in 2, 3, 5 years, like what we think of the first one really, or how the first one goes, like really doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're just overanalyzing it right now, probably. Yeah.
That's okay.
And that's what everyone's going to do, like, because it's one day after it's happened.
Yeah, but I found it very interesting. Sorry to cut you off. But just in the, I noticed in the interviews, like, I think I saw Michael Johnson getting interviewed beforehand. And I think Jonathan Galt was asking about, like, the money side of it. And as he was trying to brush off all those questions, just being like, I'm not here to talk about money. Like, just here to talk about racing. And then and then one day later, when I saw, like, how empty the stands were, I was like, oh, they would have known that this was coming, you know? And they would have been, like, preparing for the backlash that they knew they were going to get from having, like, empty stands and stuff and all these questions about money and stuff. Like, that would have been a pretty stressful
few days for them.
Like, knowing that. Because apparently on the ground, it was amazing atmosphere at the track. That's what Sage said. But on the camera, like, the stands being empty was just not the best look.
No.
You know, orient the cameras differently.
Well, all the highlights from day one were like the runners like racing on the backstretch where there was like actually not a single soul in the stands. I'm like, guys, we got to get some kind of camera angle that's pointing towards the home stretch here just for promotional purposes. Because if I'm like watching this day two without watching day one, I'm like, what am I watching here? Like, there's not a soul out there. Like, I'm just watching some kind of like dual meet, basically, like a high school dual meet almost. But obviously, it's not like that. So, yeah, we'll see how the rest go.
Yeah. Do you know why I also like this time of year in professional track and field is the release, speaking of sports marketing, release of new uniforms.
Oh, yeah.
It's always fun, actually, to me. What did you guys think?
I think the Nike uniforms are hideous.
I agree.
You agree?
Yeah. Okay.
I'm glad I'm not the only one. I'm like, these things
not bad from the back.
I think the back is hideous. It's like some kind of like cosmic radiation like thing going on back there. The front's fine. Like, I kind of like, I like the very distinct lines. I think I'm more into that than this, like, I guess, like fusing of colors and random shapes. It's not the worst I've ever seen, but obviously, like, Nike athletes have to promote this in some sort of front, being like, these are great new kits. And I look at them, I'm like, eh.
Do you think it looks suspiciously similar to the old Union kits?
Oh, yeah, they do. They look like, when I first saw it, I was like, oh, new Union kits, but like, it's not.
Oh, what's up with that?
Yeah, I don't know. It's just the colors. It's like the light
same
blue
colors.
And the orange and the white. Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What
I guess like
out there?
From an ego perspective, I was like, damn, like I really like those Adidas kits. Like, I would have loved to wear that.
It's
so
funny that
red.
Their ones were sick and theirs was like the most simple. Mm-hmm. Also, Puma's were pretty cool and theirs were very simple as well.
They went
Puma? Oh, yeah.
They were just purple.
Purple.
Purple's good. Yeah. I mean, for the road racers, they have like the purple shoes too, which is kind of fun. So it all kind of matches. It's a different color. Like, I don't feel like it, many men's uniforms have gone. Oh, I guess the Adidas kits were like a very dark purple last year with the yellow accents. But yeah, this is like a very obvious purple.
I don't know how I feel about, or I don't know how Cole would feel about his gold medal kit either.
Yeah. No. I think the gold medal kit in the male form in Cole's speed suit looked a bit off, but I saw it on, I can't remember who it was in the women's, but I thought it looked good in like the cut of, there's so many different cuts of the uniforms now, and they really make a difference to how good the pattern and the design looks. It's so interesting. I think it's really hard to get it right across the whole spectrum of different uniforms that people like to wear now. But
really is.
What do you guys think about your on uniforms?
Well
it's not public yet.
Nothing from New Balance, I don't think, and nothing from us. But stay tuned.
We're very excited.
Why do I feel like I've seen a new uniform?
We're only a couple of weeks out.
Oh, we had a special edition
Milrose kit. Right. But there was maybe a post from Sidious that said new kits for On, but that was a mistake.
So they're coming out in a couple of weeks. And yeah, New Balance is the same. And I'm trying to think of who else. I think that's pretty much
we Brooks.
Brooks.
But I don't know. Does Josh Gross still get his own uniform? Probably not. Maybe. I don't know. I guess the last year he was wearing these World Champs one.
Mm-hmm. Someone I was watching with... We already roasted him for his 150-800, but someone I was watching with said he looked like an aerobics instructor from like the 80s. Everything was like psychedelic colors.
I forget what the Brooks uniform looked like. I need to look back at it.
Different color you could think
blue
of.
Blue shorts.
Yeah, I guess the Nike ones were like kind of the worst for me, and that stood out the most. I was like, I just really don't like, especially for like, I don't know. I like a soft launch where it's just like, just have the athletes racing them. But when you like, when a brand is like, look at these sick new uniforms and they're just objectively not that great, it's just like, it just annoys me a little bit where I'm just like, now I actually hate them because you like tried to make it seem like they're cool and you wanted to like project that onto us rather than just allowing the audience to like that decision for themselves, you know?
That's a good point right there.
Good way of looking at it. Good. I'm not sure if ours is a soft launch or a hard launch.
I think ours will be.
Yeah, maybe take notes, guys.
Yeah.
Just someone who's like pretty good at the marathon is going to be wearing it soon, I think.
Pretty good at the marathon.
Who could that be? No, but we're really excited for it. I think ours will be cool.
I like Adidas white kits, Wanyonyi.
Was that a gold medal kit too?
I don't know, but it was great.
It was sweet.
I thought it was sick. He may have been like my favorite athlete of the meet.
Bro.
Like, out kicking
the best 1500 meter runners in the world and celebrating on that.
Yeah.
I didn't even see that until the replay. It was so funny. It wasn't directed towards the crowd. It wasn't like pumping up the crowd. It was like in Cole and Yard's direction. It was like
brutal.
With like 20 meters to go. Dude, that dude was baller.
Yeah.
I think he's like almost, like, I feel like it's not a shock that he's the best at both. He's on 141 and he like held the mile road world record last year.
Right.
Like, he almost has the best range already.
I think it was a question of how fast he could run in a 1500.
Yeah, for sure.
And he showed he can run pretty fast.
Yeah, 335 is good. And
closing 51.
But I guess that's where it's like interesting. It's like, okay, we'll see how the Miami Grand Slam is handled in terms of how the 1500 guys train and then expect to show up and race. It just makes for super interesting dynamics, I think, where it's like, okay, we know the context of what happened last time and we'll see if it affects anything going into this time. I think Cole had an interview where he's like, I don't think any of us like took the idea that we're like playing into the 800 guys' hands lightly per se. It's just, that's just kind of how it happened where...
Well, no, everyone was talking about the 1500 guys. No one expected 800 guys to go 1-2 in that group.
Yeah.
Like that was definitely unpredictable.
No, that was probably the one where I was like, oh, like...
Did they go 1-2?
I think A-Rob.
Yeah, A-Rob, since he won the second.
Because there's so many points for winning.
Yeah.
And then...
You got 3 points on the first day and then 12 on the second.
Yeah, 15 points. And because Wanyonyi had, 12 and 8? Yeah. 20. Huh. Yeah, it's crazy how that worked out.
That's true. That was something I was like, these 800 guys are going to get waxed because we know that Cole, Yard, and Josh are capable of running fast 800s. Like, they've run...
Yeah.
I mean, Yard's run 140. I think Yard's the slowest at 146, and we all know that he can run faster than that. And Josh has even run, like, 145 or maybe even 144. And Cole is just, like... I don't know. I think he's, like, run 145 or 146, but he's also just, like... He showed a great kick this weekend, but just, like, was not really in the best spot when he was ready to unleash it, I guess. So, yeah, I guess that's, like... maybe it is like these slams are just meant to build off of each other and just like create more anticipation. I don't think it's going to mean more butts in the seats, in the stands per se.
Well, I think America, there will be much more.
I hope so.
I think it will.
Specifically. I'm not anticipating much for Miami, to be honest. Yeah. But Philly and LA for sure.
Hopefully. But we'll see. Yeah, big shout out. It was awesome to see our teammates out there competing in this new fun event. And they all did pretty well.
Yeah, honestly. Great.
Yeah. It was Jared ended up third, right?
Mm-hmm.
Sige was third.
Mm-hmm.
And then Sage and Dylan were both fifth.
Yeah, I think 2/3, 2/5.
Yeah.
I think it's great when you just like go out there and you just compete, you know? It's just like you don't have to be in like monster shape. You just go out there and you just a lot of people just went out there and just like ran their hardest, you know? And I think that's good, especially at this time of year where it's like, who knows how it's going to go, but they all just ran hard. I was stoked about Sage. I thought Sage did great.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah. But those are our takeaways. Is there anything else to share with whoever's listening from Grand Slam marketing team?
I'm still very excited to watch the next one.
I'm excited to watch the highlights of the next one.
Yeah, I'm excited to skip through it. Peacock is so good for replays.
To be fair, I consume most sports in highlight form, but I think this presentation is very hard to consume in the full form.
For sure.
Long form.
Well, they also post all the videos on YouTube like the day after too, so I think...
Yeah.
That helps a little bit. I think, yeah. Maybe it's just this is the format that they have and they know they can get the reach on the back end on socials.
That's the other thing is I imagine there's I imagine we know about 10% of what's going on. There's probably 90% of factors that we don't even know about when it comes to the money and TV and all this. There's probably so much stuff that we say and then if we said it to them, they'd be like, oh, but we can't do that because of this. And it's just something that we wouldn't even know about.
Too much red tape or whatever you call it. Where it's just like, that's something that we tried to do, but we just couldn't because of this reason.
But I will say it did make the Diamond League look really good, which is not their goal, obviously.
Yeah.
But the concise 2 hours that the Diamond League presents looked real good.
I think it was disappointing. I guess my last thing was... where they're like, it starts at 3:00 and then you tune in at 3:00 and it's 5 minutes before they start a pre-meet show.
He's like, 40
it's
minutes.
Just then it's a 40-minute pre-meet show. And it's why can't we say races start at 3:40?
Far too much dead time.
Yeah.
I thought all the commentators were amazing. That's something that they did pretty well. I think Centra got better every single day.
Yeah.
I liked a lot of what he said, but
his t-shirts got weirder each day.
Yeah, I was okay, just from a branding standpoint, I'm shocked that that's a thing that he's sponsored or being paid to wear Tracksmith. How did Nike let him go?
I don't know.
Is he not on a lifetime deal with them?
That's every conversation I've had in the last couple of days has been about that. Centra, it's I thought he was going to be with Nike for life.
That's crazy. the giant hair rabbit stitched on there.
Shout out to Tracksmith for picking it up.
They capitalized. So Centra was great. I really like Centra and that. And
I wonder how much they paid him because he got far more camera time than any of the athletes if you think about it.
He did.
Seriously. So that is an interesting thing to think about. But I hope that we weren't, I would love to hear, because we live in such a bubble. I would love to really hear, I still can't, I'm not sure what the public actually thinks, you know? I just get exposed to little snippets here on Instagram and then among the team, most people, you know, we kind of think the same because we kind of live in the same world. But I would love to hear what everyone else thought of it as well. But hopefully we weren't sounding too harsh because our main message, I would say, is still really excited about it.
Totally.
And especially going forward, it's hoping that it continues to grow and can make some positive changes. And we really want it to be successful. That's the thing. We really want it to be successful.
Yeah, 100%.
It's at the base level, it is a good idea. It's a great idea to have a league in our sport. And it's good for everyone, I think. So we're
rooting for you.
Yeah.
Michael Johnson and Kyle Merber.
Yeah. Especially the team, Kyle Merber. The two of them.
Yeah, it's just that too. They're in the broadcast booth, yeah, like trying to switch everything. Between. Okay, here's the one thing I actually like genuinely hated about the meet was the drone shots.
Oh,
I cannot stand the drone shots.
Dude, like following the athlete?
Oh my God, dude, it's just so bad.
I think it was
kind of crazy that they had them so close, I thought.
No, but they just used them poorly.
Yeah.
Because I think it was maybe in the men's 1500 or the 800. It was one of their races. They had a drone shot from going into the bell lap. There was a drone shot that was like 50 meters behind them and you couldn't even see what was happening in the race. And it was like a key part of the race, like going into
the
bell.
It's like the quality of the video is so bad too. It's just like, like Sound Running has tried this, like, you know, the American track leader, everybody's tried the drone shot and it just never works. It's just so bad.
There are sometimes I like it more than others.
In cross country, it looks freaking
sometimes
dope.
I like it.
They need it to be like, you know, like a follow drone one.
Yeah.
They need like tape it, like something on the leader, and it just like hovers above whoever's at the front.
No, I think it's just like, I think it was mostly the time of when they were using them was like not good for like being able to watch the race.
And I just didn't know who was where. You couldn't tell. And so every time I went to a drone shot, I was just groaning. So until you find somebody that is like, whoever. The person that needs to get paid the most out of this meet is the drone operator.
And most
they need
important
to be
job.
The best in the world at it. So they say only the best. So only the best drone operator moving forward. If not, I don't want to see it because it's just the quality of the video. It was just so much worse than the actual like shots were very crisp, especially, you know, like the general track shots, like very crisp, very good. And you get to the drone shot and you're like, I can't see shit. You know,
yeah, it's not like, something that really like needed to be reinvented.
No. Yeah.
Like,
oh, it pissed me off. Yeah. That's my one like actual critique of like, wow, that was actually really bad.
Yeah. Funny. Well, Joey, is there anything else that you'd like to discuss?
I think I need to talk more about this drone shot. No.
Get it off your chest.
When are we getting a Joey Bags steeplechase opener?
I think I'm going to do Peyton Jordan invite and just open up there. My steeplechases, the first couple are usually like pretty rough. Like, I know you're kind of the opposite. Like, you waltzed into, where'd you go last year where you ran 809?
I ran Stockholm first.
Was that Stockholm?
I only ran Stockholm and Paris.
That pissed me off so much seeing you run 809 right at the start. I'm like, God, I run like 850 and get beaten by college kids. But I think
hometown hero.
Yeah. I'm going to go back home and I'm going to go see my family and stay with them. And I think I'll always kind of have one of those two Stanford meets on the schedule just for the sake of seeing my family outside of like Christmas holiday season.
Nice. It was a great meet.
And it's just good to run, like a lot of my family and friends come. So it's really good to see them. And so I'll probably open up there and then most likely go to the Sound Running meet after that, where maybe I'll show down with you for a second if you're
maybe
thinking about going. And then after that, I don't know. I might be going to Europe for some races. I'm not getting any Diamond League, so unless I run 810. So I don't know. Are you doing... You got Diamond Leagues on the schedule?
Dude, have you seen the men's Diamond League schedule this year?
Yes, I have.
It's terrible.
Yeah, well, I didn't get into China, so if I ain't getting to China, I ain't getting any other ones.
Is it not good, like specifically for steeple?
It's China, tough, yeah. China, Morocco are the first three.
Mm-hmm.
Not bad meets. They're just very hard to get to.
Monaco could be fun.
Yeah, Monaco is the next one, so that is sweet.
All right, I'm going to run faster so I can get into Monaco.
You should, dude. That's on my ultimate plan for the year. I would love to go back.
Yeah, so
it's so sweet.
We'll see. I don't know. It's just whatever can set me up best for USAs and just performing as well as I can. Like, I just want to make worlds, and I think I'm getting closer every year. So just continuing to trend in that direction. And
hell yeah,
nobody's unbeatable at this point, and which just kind of seems like a lot to say with Rooks winning silver last year, but. I think that's the mentality that a lot of the guys are going into this year in the steeplechase for the Americans. It's just like, I can go out there and I can beat anybody. So I got to hop on that train with them.
Hell yeah. Well, Joey, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Once again, hopefully, it'll be less time to the next one.
I hope so.
We won't let it be about 170 episodes.
That's okay.
But we'll be following on your story. For sure, both on Instagram, Real World, but especially through your newsletter. So very excited to read that every week when it gets delivered to my inbox.
Yeah. Thank you for subscribing, both of you. I appreciate it.
Was I like one of the first subscribers?
You were. Yeah. I get like little notifications of like every email that subscribes. So really?
I felt like I got on there quick.
You did hop on quick. So
good.
Yeah, I appreciate you guys having me on, and it's good to be back. And yeah, let's do the same time next week.
All right. See you there. No, but thank you once again, Joey. Thank you so much, everyone, for listening to the Coffee Club podcast for episode 181. We'll see you guys all again next week. Bye-bye.